In this lecture, we shall look at the tax position of beneficiaries who receive a legacy from a deceased person's estate. A legacy will either take the form of a specified sum of money or a particular asset. The tax position of the recipient depends on the nature of the legacy. A legacy of a specified sum of money is called a pecuniary legacy. The beneficiary is entitled to that sum of money and no more. The beneficiary is not entitled to interest on the money, and therefore has no tax liability in respect of the legacy. If there is a delay in paying the legacy, the law requires the executors to pay interest once a period of 12 months has elapsed. This interest is taxed on the beneficiary as it arises. A legacy might also take the form of a specific asset, such as shares, land or buildings, or personal chattels. If that asset does not produce income, for example, a painting or a motor car, the beneficiary has no entitlement to income and therefore has no tax liability in respect of the asset. The position is different if the beneficiary receives a legacy of an income-producing asset. In this instance, the beneficiary is entitled to the income arising from the asset with effect from the date of death. The income will be paid initially to the executors, who will include the income within their income tax return and pay tax on it in the usual way. However, the executors must then redirect the income to the beneficiary, together with a tax certificate specifying the gross income and the tax deducted at source. The beneficiary is then taxed on the gross income, with an appropriate tax credit, in the year in which it arose to the executors. This principle was established in the case of CIR versus Hawley from 1927. The other way in which a beneficiary can receive a legacy from an estate is if he or she is entitled to all or part of the residue of an estate. The residue of the estate is what is left after the executors have met all taxes, expenses, and liabilities and settled any specific or pecuniary legacies under the will. A person may either be entitled to an absolute interest or a limited interest in the residue. A person who is entitled to all or part of the capital representing the residue, together with any income generated during the administration period from those capital assets, is said to have an absolute interest. A beneficiary has a limited interest in the residue if he or she is entitled to the income generated by those capital assets, but will not receive the capital assets themselves. A beneficiary with a limited interest has much the same entitlements as the life tenant of an interest in possession trust. For income tax purposes, the way we treat the beneficiaries is the same, regardless of whether they have an absolute or a limited interest in the residue. A beneficiary with a residuary interest is not treated as receiving income as it arises. Instead, the beneficiary is only taxed on income actually distributed by the executors during the administration period. When income is distributed to a beneficiary, it is deemed to come from non-savings income in priority to interest and dividends. As the income would have been taxed in the hands of the executors via their own self-assessment return, the income paid to the beneficiary will carry an appropriate tax credit, i.e. 20% for non-savings income, 20% for interest, and 10% for dividends. This will be certified by the executors on Form R185, Estate Income. Any residuary income which is received by the executors but not paid out to the beneficiary is carried forward. If an asset is distributed to a beneficiary during the administration period, this is treated as a distribution of income equal to the value of that asset at that date. For example, if a chattel, such as a painting, is distributed to the residuary legatee and the painting is worth, say, £10,000, the residuary legatee is deemed to have received net non-savings income of £10,000 at the date the painting is transferred. This principle applies to the transfer of any asset, however trivial. The beneficiary is deemed to have received any undistributed income in the tax year in which the administration of the estate is completed. This will be the total residuary income, less any income previously distributed, and less any expenses properly chargeable against the residuary income. If distributions in the tax year exceed the income arising to the executors in the year, the amount taxable on the beneficiary is restricted to the income arising. The estate expenses are deemed to have been paid from the net dividend income. If the estate has insufficient dividend income, expenses are next deemed to have come from interest income. If interest has been extinguished, expenses come finally from non-savings income. By way of illustration, assume Roy died in July 2009. His executors completed the administration of his estate in September 2010. His will left a specific legacy of shares in XYZ PLC to his son. The residue of his estate was left to his wife, absolutely. The residue consisted of a private house, a holiday cottage, and cash deposits. Details of the executor's income and expenses for 2009-10 and 2010-11 should now have appeared on your screen. In December 2009, the executors distributed income of £2,000 to the wife as residuary legatee. At the same time, the executors also transferred a car worth £3,000 to the wife. We will look at how the income is taxed on the beneficiaries of the estate. I will pause this lecture for a moment to allow you to digest the numbers. When you're happy to proceed, click the continue button. The wife has an absolute entitlement to the residue of the estate. Therefore, she will receive the capital of the residue together with any income generated by those assets. Whilst the estate is in administration, she will only be taxed on distributions actually made to her by the executors. In December 2009, the executors made an income distribution of £2,000 and a capital distribution, in the form of a car, of £3,000. The distribution of capital is treated as a payment of income, so the deemed income distribution is £5,000. This £5,000 is deemed to come from the rental income received by the executors in 2009-10, on which tax at 20% was paid under self-assessment. Therefore, the wife is deemed to have received the £5,000 net of basic rate tax. The executors will therefore certify on Form R185 that the wife has received gross income of £6,250, from which £1,250 of income tax was withheld at source. The wife will include this within her own self-assessment return for 2009-10. The son was left a specific legacy of the XYZ PLC shares. As this is a legacy of an income-producing asset, the dividends on the shares should be redirected by the executors to the son and taxed on the son in the year they arose. As the dividends carry a 10% tax credit, the executors will certify on Form R185 that the son has gross dividends of £10,000. The son will pay any higher rate tax on the dividend if appropriate. As the dividend has been mandated to the son, it will not form part of the wife's income entitlement from the estate. The administration period ended in September 2010, that is, in 2010-11. The wife is entitled to the net income of the residuary estate, therefore any income which has not yet been distributed by the executors will be deemed to have been distributed on the 30th of September 2010. We therefore need to work out the total net income of the estate in order to calculate what the wife is taxed on in 2010-11. The executors received rental income and bank interest. We will not include the dividends on the XYZ PLC shares, as these were mandated to the son. We start with the first tax year of administration being 2009-10. Rental income was £9,000 and bank interest, grossed up, was £6,250. In 2010-11, gross income was £6,000 and £5,000 respectively. The executors would have paid tax at the basic and lower rates on this income. Total tax paid on the rental income across the 2 years was £3,000. Tax deducted at source from the interest was £2,250. We next need to consider expenses. Expenses of managing the estate in 2009-10 amounted to £1,500. Expenses in 2010-11 were £1,000. Even though these expenses were not deductible when calculating the income tax payable by the executors, they will reduce the income entitlement of the residuary beneficiary. Therefore, we must consider them when calculating the total distributable income. Expenses are deemed to have been met from dividend income first, interest second, and non-savings income last. Here the expenses will have been paid from the bank interest. This leaves us with total distributable income as per your screen. Finally here, it is important that the executors differentiate between expenses which are chargeable against income and those which relate to the capital of the estate. This is particularly important where a beneficiary has a limited interest in residue and is therefore entitled to income only. Only expenses properly chargeable against the income of the estate should be allowed to reduce the residuary income. The net distributable income totals £18,500 as per your screen. However, in 2009-10, the beneficiary received total income distributions of £5,000. These were treated as being paid out of rental income, thereby reducing the amount to be distributed at the end of the administration period. At September 2010, the beneficiary will receive net income of £13,500. This will be certified by the executors on Form R185. The net rental income paid out in 2010-11 is £7,000. As the rents have been taxed via the estate returns at basic rate, the income carries a basic rate tax credit and must therefore be grossed up at 100 over 80. The net bank interest paid out in 2010-11 is £6,500. As the interest has been taxed at source at 20%, this income also carries a 20% tax credit and must therefore be grossed up at 100 over 80. The beneficiary will enter the gross figures on her self-assessment return for 2010-11 and pay any additional tax as appropriate. If the beneficiary is a non-taxpayer, these tax credits may be reclaimed.
It is possible for a beneficiary to have a discretionary interest in the residue of the estate. There are two situations where a beneficiary might be given a discretionary interest in the residue. Firstly, the executors might be given discretionary powers to select the beneficiaries who are to receive the residue of the estate. Secondly, once the administration is completed, the will could direct that the residue be transferred to discretionary trustees who will thereafter have discretionary powers over the income. Where the executors are given power to select beneficiaries at their discretion, the revenue's treatment of the income is dealt with by Statement of Practice No. 4 of 1993. Any income distributed to a beneficiary is taxed on the beneficiary in the year in which it is paid. The income is deemed to have been paid after the deduction of tax at the applicable rate.
The applicable rate is the basic or dividend rate, depending on the source of income.
Income distributions are deemed to be made from non-savings income in priority to interest or dividends. The executors will provide the beneficiary with a tax deduction certificate detailing the gross income and the income tax withheld. A discretionary will trust set upon death is an example of an instance where a beneficiary has a discretionary interest in an estate. In this instance, the testator will direct in his will that the whole of his estate be left on discretionary trust, thereby giving powers to his executors to distribute his estate entirely at their discretion.
If the executors make income distributions whilst the estate is in administration, such distributions will be made net of tax at the applicable rates, i.e. 20% or 10%.
Once the administration period is complete, the capital assets and any accumulated income from those assets will pass to a discretionary trust.
Any subsequent income distributions by the trustees will be deemed to carry a 50% tax credit in accordance with the normal rules for discretionary trusts. The trustees will pay income tax at the rates applicable to trusts, being basic or lower rates, on the first £1,000 and thereafter at 50% and 42.5%.
In the inheritance tax course, we looked at the IHT and CGT effects of a deed of variation. Here we shall consider the income tax implications. Assume that Walter dies, leaving his estate to James. James entered into a deed of variation under which he redirected his legacy to his two daughters, Susan and Amy. A deed of variation cannot apply retrospectively for income tax purposes. Therefore, if James received any income from the estate before he made the variation, the income will be taxed on James in the usual way, with a corresponding tax credit. For income tax purposes, the variation is effective from the date it is made. It cannot be backdated to the date of death, as it can be for IHT purposes. Any income which has arisen to the executors, but which has not been paid out to James by the date of the variation, thereafter belongs to the new beneficiaries, that is, to Susan and Amy. Any subsequent distributions of income are taxed on Susan and Amy at the date of receipt, with the balance of the estate income taxed on the new beneficiaries at the end of the administration period. The settlor of any trust set up under the variation will be James. This is because he was the person entitled to the legacy before the variation. Section 629 I Toya 2005 will apply here if Susan and Amy are the minor unmarried children of James. You will recall from the session on settlor anti-avoidance that if a parent sets up a trust for such minor children, any distributions to the children will be assessed on the settlor under section 629. This rule will apply here, as James will be deemed to have made a parental settlement for income tax purposes.